Episode number 217 with Scott Stewart. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
Loyal sidekick, Mike Schneiderman.
Mike Schneiderman.
And not really loyal, Steve. I'd shivvy in the back for a pair of sneakers and $10, but well, you
know. Loyal, you're swinging honest. At a loyal. Solid 73%, yes.
Not entirely disloyal, for sure.
I missed you, man. I missed you. At, this week we got Scott Stewart, just a rock star in the circuit. You know what I love most about this man is he is just, he's not afraid to win. I mean, he just wants to take it down, you know. I was really impressed with his heads-up match with Mormon. That was, just a rock star in the tournament world. And
Or he just keeps getting lots of aces when he's shorthanded, Steve.
He could be that too.
Maybe he's just there's running. Alternative theories here.
But and he's interested in a Roth IRA. We talked about that the last time he was on the show, and so I got some notes, and I'm excited. And
You're actually prepared to ask some questions here?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So. Well, how you doing, man?
I was thinking of just coming up with a couple fat jokes, but, you know, I can't really.
Throw a couple dad jokes in there.
Very, very bad week of poker.
Was it?
Kind of pretty much a total mental breakdown. I haven't played for 5 days, which, I mean, I need the money, but it's like, you know, sometimes you just got to step away.
Yeah.
And then hopefully back to the grind. But,
happened?
Down. Well, I mean, there's some run bad there, certainly. But, yeah. You know, down like 8,500 over like a 8 or 9 day stretch.
That's rough.
I actually went to a different casino last week, and I'm probably going to do it again. I got to start looking at the other casinos around. I've been married to Oceans, and it's so good because it's so close.
Yeah.
Rake back, food. I got my friends all there. But this was a game changer. I think it was a week and a half. I mean, we knew it was getting bad. There was already three foreigners who've been planted there for a couple of years.
Okay.
Then there's always a couple moving in and out. I don't know if it was just a perfect storm, but was it last Thursday? I can't remember. I actually did the numbers on three tables. There's 1 5-5, 10 and 2 2-5s. There were 12 people playing on Poker Pros playing on passports.
Yeah.
That's like 11 too many. Plus, we got other. There's just not enough money in the place to. For me to, you know, I am not prepared for this. You know, this is my own fault. I'm not prepared for this. Where, I can play like really good players, even. You know what I mean? My game is good. I mean, I can like one or two of them, but here it's. It was pretty. I don't feel like coming up with 4-bet ranges in a fucking five different players at the table. So
well, where's the next softest game? What's the other casino?
Well, I'm gonna be going around all of them.
Okay.
So I mean, maybe it'll get better or not, but this is also very disturbing news. There's another kid who showed up. He hadn't been there for a long time, and he's a guy who's he's really good. He's made a living playing poker for 10 years now. He's able to crush the 5-10. And he was playing 5-10 in LA. He's like, I had to stop playing it. It was just like me and like 7 euros. It was just pointless. Huh. I mean, he doesn't get owned by anyone, but there's just not a dollar on the table. So he actually switched to 2-5 and it for a while. And then he came here hoping the 5-5-10 runs, and it does sometimes, but he's still totally content playing the two five at Oceans with an 800 cap. So this is not even a foreigner. This is someone else who, the blight is moving southward. Pretty much there's so many Euros and goddamn leather ass pros, just nothing for poker in LA. So when people are leaving LA poker, which most people say is the best, as good as it gets, that's like really, really bad sign. So I hopefully like it's a temporary thing. But I don't know. Like I said, this guy coming to just the gathering of people there. And all of them willing to play 2-5 if that 5-5-10 doesn't run. So, last Thursday, I lost like 1,500. And I said, I'm done with the place. And we'll see. I got at least. But I did the math, Steve. It would be very expensive for me to go somewhere else to play poker if some of these places, which are like an hour and 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
So that's potentially 40 or 50 hours of driving a month. So that alone, if you assume that I'm making $50 an hour normally, that's like a $2,500 giveaway right there. You take away the rake back, the food, you know, other things. For me to play elsewhere, it really is like, if I actually have to fucking find a place to stay, then it's just impossible. But I'm going to investigate it. But like I said, I'm going to definitely be bumping around from here to there.
Well, maybe you've been at Oceans a while now, and it sounds like gradually the competition has just gotten stiffer and stiffer and stiffer. And you might find another little honey hole and maybe your hourly goes up. I don't know. And then you don't have to work as much.
Right. Well, right now I it's hard for me to say. My hourly, as it's set up now, something I couldn't pay the bills with. So if you think my assessment of $4,000 a month to play elsewhere is proper, then it's kind of hard to recoup that, you know, but, anyways, I got to go elsewhere and see. And, I just got, I had my one buddy was over here and we're talking poker and this and that and the situation. And he's, he's another poker pro, long time, great win rate. And he finds the situation right now ridiculous, but we're talking, he's like, dude, with your monthly nut, there's nothing you can do. It's going to catch up to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I get $8,000 a month, that's probably similar to what you have, Steve, but I don't get, retirement funds and you don't have a kid and all sorts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, what can you do to make your life cheaper?
I need to find a roommate or move out of here. Probably just hang on for a year.
You know, one of the biggest leaks I see, is, cars. What's your car situation?
I got a Honda Accord. $477 a month, but still like, I'm not sure, $9,000 or $10,000 left to pay. It was probably a 60 month loan.
Okay, so
I probably paid off 4 years of it. I paid off the majority of it. I think it was like $30K loan.
Okay.
Yeah. So the next thing I should do is, just buy a shitbox, I guess, or something. I don't know.
I would start there. You'll save yourself so much. Whatever you got to do to get away from that car that you have and into a car that you don't owe a dime on is, I would say, step one. Because you're just hemorrhaging money each month.
I don't have money to lay down and buy cash for a car either.
Well, you can get a car for $2,000.
Right. If I could, I don't know. The Honda, it might run for 8 more years, though. You never know. And I got 2 more years of payments, so it might be long-term. It might be a better to hold on to it. But it's good advice. A lot of it is just, eating out. Again, last night, me and my son went out and ate restaurant right around the corner. I could have just easily, if I had, microwave pizza and some fruit in the fridge.
Yeah.
Could have saved myself $40 there. Food would be the one thing that's pretty, I got the $5 a day I spend on stuff that 7-Eleven kind of shit that you wouldn't, monster drink and stuff. So that all the stuff, the food and everything.
Okay. So $5 a day, that's 150 a month that, you're just like, where'd that go? Okay.
I don't know, Steve, I'm sure if you spent time with me, you'd be just appalled with, certain things. It's just, if it's laziest or conflict averse, or I don't know. It's like, I think I told you, I went to, what was the name of the big booted? So one of those jeans, I bought a nice pair of jeans for like $50 or $60.
Uh-huh.
And this was back when I was like, down to 210 pounds and knew I'd lose 10 or 15. And I needed like, my clothes were getting baggy again, kind of, So I bought a nice pair of jeans and I went home and put them on and leaned over and they just ripped in half.
Oh God.
And I just picked them up and threw them in the trash. I didn't want to explain my ass is too big for them. Maybe they don't give you money back for that. They give it back if it don't fit. If you rip it, I don't know if you even.
I think you might have bought those. Yeah, I don't think they take back a pair of jeans. It's just ripped.
Well, I don't know.
Oh God. Okay. Sorry.
There's a lot of stuff. I probably could look at more competitive prices for cell phones and, you know, other shit basically. Yeah. You know, I'm sometimes maybe overly generous to the baby mama. When I went home for the funeral, I said, well, her friend's going to take care of the kid. And I said, well, here's $200 to give her, take care of, you know, meals and thank her for everything. And then I come back and this woman didn't want it. She's like, no, I do this for free. I'm like, okay, Meredith, you want to give me the $200 back? She's like, no. I'm like, okay. I just shrug my shoulders, whatever. Steve, you would not be so passive in those situations. This is where your pimp hand would come out swinging with quick twitch ferocity. I should not. My son's got a great mom, but you know what I mean? She's just, and she's kind of a low wage gal, but there's just times where I'm convinced she finds ways for me to spend money just out of pure creativity / spite. Jonah really needs this. And then, you know, he doesn't actually need it.
Yeah. Kind of
shit, you know what I mean? So, but, I don't know, man. Yeah. It's frustrating right now. It's set up where I can like survive, but just kind of barely. Like I've got to just grind super, super hard. So, I stupidly renewed my lease 2 months ago and, I'll have to get a roommate, which I just don't want to do, or move simply or find like a side income.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the problem. Like what side income I'm going to get here? We've already had my sister's always forensic accounting. You just take one class and say, have experience and you good with math and da, 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 da. And I'm like, you know,
do you ever listen to audiobooks?
No.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
You got some, you think I should just start recording some of my pornographic stories online? Selling into your audiobooks.
Dating Mikey. what are your plans for running up Reno? Are you going up?
No, not gonna do it. Steve, there will be no poker tournaments for a while, and there will be no travel for poker for a while, because as far as I know, because those things, just when you're this up against it, there's playing tournaments or traveling is just utterly insane. Pretty much you're gonna get one up there to meet, you're meeting Carlos up there, or
I don't know. I have it marked out on my calendar, the 16th through the 21st. Those are the days I have off. And there's nothing written down other than running up Reno. So I kind of feel obligated to go. I think it'll depend on the weather. If I can fly my plane up and back, I'll go. If not, so it might be a game time decision. But we'll see.
Well, you're welcome to come down here for the week, Steve, if you got nothing going on.
Oh, that might be fun.
Although okay. I didn't even look at it. I got to go in on October 14th to see about jury duty. And I'm guessing if you get picked, they don't have you just, well, your court starts the next day. I'm guessing you get a court date like a month or two down the line.
Oh, I don't think we have to worry about you getting picked, my friend. I think we'll be fine. But,
yeah, I put a list of reasons that I'm not, you know, beyond that I have childcare issues. You know, financial issues. I also said, you know, I'm wildly irrational, mentally ill. I just don't get along with others. I'm crazy. You know, I can
make
tell
sure
if someone
wear your scarf with one of your patented hats.
Right. I did say yeah. I have great reading abilities. All I have to do is look at a person and know if they're innocent or guilty.
Yeah, I don't need to hear any factual information at all.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure to throw that in.
At all. Yeah, but you're welcome to. Yeah, it might be work. That I have my son that week during the day.
Okay, the 16th is a Wednesday and the 21st is a Monday. So it'd be Wednesday through Sunday. I'm not going to fucking crash your pad for the whole time, but we can find a couple day window in there or something. That'd be fun.
Right. Okay, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. Cool. Good deal. Yeah. And you got that little airport right next to you.
Yep.
Perfect. Perfect for puddle jumping. Let's see, Renan Aprino, cool.
What's going on with you, Steve? How's the? You know, I was thinking again. I do not, for all our Bitcoin conversations, I pretty much avoid that. Thankfully, no one's talking to the poker table. But I was thinking, if you're doing the trading anyways, I mean, we had this discussion before. I forget the term they used it, but like the daily trading, the Bitcoin altcoin was considered much more predictable. Like the little ups and downs of it,
you know,
that was the whole group of investor class is acting in a very herdy way.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Something starts selling and everyone, you know, fear of missing out, everyone starts buying it or everyone starts selling and up and down. I'm just kidding, depending on what things go, their profit margins might be higher there than elsewhere. I mean, I know you trained for the stocks, but I think it's pretty much.
The patterns are the same. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I think the patterns are even more predictable. I heard someone explaining this in Bitcoin, whatever reason, all the altcoins are going to go up together. And there's like a little more predictable, like once Bitcoin goes up, if you know, the next day or two, you'll notice a trend in the other ones come dragging up. So, you know, I don't know how much money you put in, but if you turned in, and of course you're not even looking at it from a dollar amount, like you want to buy 2 Bitcoin and then hopefully over 2 years, turn it into 6 Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, by keep spinning these little margins up. But, yeah, I give that advice thinking, God, I don't want to talk about Bitcoin anymore. But I was just, you know, thinking about
I got about 10 grand on the table right now that is free and clear. I'm 5 grand ahead from my original 450 investment, and I got 10K on the table, and I'm letting it ride. I'm like, F it. It doesn't owe me a dime. If it goes to zero, so be it. If it goes up to whatever, then finds a net every now and then. That's exactly what happened with me, and it was no foresight or anything. But maybe you're right about as far as trading. I haven't found an avenue yet to be able to trade that quickly. I don't know if Coinbase would be the way to do it. And I feel like I've spent the last almost year studying these other programs, and I'm just starting to like really grasp the software and all that. I don't want to fuck with success, you know. But
So your investing is going well with the stocks and bonds.
It is. Yeah. Okay. It's fun.
Well, there you go then.
It's a lot of fun. Maybe you're right. Maybe there is more predictability and I'm missing out, but, right now I like the game I'm playing, and you're right. Maybe it isn't the most profitable one, but it's the one that it's the most fun for me to, explore right now. Anyways, let's take a little break and we'll bring in Scott Stewart. Sonic speed that I used to run to you. I stretch my arms for miles. I want to take a second and thank our sponsors, Elliot Rowe. Yes, that soft-spoken English linguist. Meditation tapes just before you play for the type of poker that you're about to play. So if you're a cash game player, if you're a tournament player, you just listen to that one before you play. It takes 10 minutes. And you get in the right mindset. If you have other things going on in your life, just try this right before you play and you'll get focused. He's even got them for final tables. He's got them for breaks during a online tournament, breaks during a live tournament. Maybe you get a break and now you're at the final table. Well, you listen to the live final table MP3. Click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you straight there. When you get one, use the code HUPOKER and you will score yourself a discount. Kick back some to the podcast. Also want to thank Alexander Fitzgerald and his class, Master Tournament Poker in One Class. Go through those videos. You can watch the first one for free. A whole hour of content for free. Click on the link in the show notes, and when you do purchase, use the code HUPOKER. You will score yourself 75% off Master Tournament Poker in One Class. You guys can also get these at headsuppoker.info. We had to move our website over to headsuppoker.info, you can get the discounts right there. Without further ado, Scott Stewart. Okay, Scott Stewart, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Yes, yes. I talked to you last night to make sure that we could do this recording, and it sounded like you were having a lot of fun.
Yeah, we actually, I don't come to LA that often, so I live in Long Beach, but we came out here for an event. Adam Levy, who's Ruthless online, he threw a thing at this brewery, Angel City in L.A., and it was like games and grooves. It was like there was a DJ and there was Mario Kart and a couple different other games. So we had we wrecked some beers and had some fun.
Nice.
Sounds pretty badass. How's your Mario Kart game?
That was on GameCube or the Nintendo Wii. That was my Mario Kart game's on point on N64, but not on whatever they had.
Is it the controller or is it different graphics or something? Or?
Yeah, it's like a totally different game, like different characters, different carts. And then you actually you hold the Wii controller and you just move it right to left. So like you're holding it in your hand and that's how you steer.
Oh, yeah.
It was different.
Yeah. My brother has it and we do it whenever we get together for Christmas, Thanksgiving, like that. And he's got it on the old Super Nintendo and it has the old Super Nintendo controllers. And I can wreck shop, but I can't even imagine playing it on a Wii controller like that. I would look like a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Just a Wii controller and like 8 beers is not a good idea.
Go back to the cockfight, Steve. It's pure skill.
Yes.
Don't have to worry about technology letting you down.
Oh, damn.
So what was this party for anything specific or just a desire to get some poker crushers together?
No, it was like, I think that's like kind of like the business model that guy Adam is doing. And he's done a couple of private events and a couple of events like this. And we were kind of talking to him about it. He said, he's like, just has like a DJ friend. And then like, they kind of grew up gaming and he was just kind of wanted to put the two together. And then he was talking to us about it. He said, oh yeah, I called this brewery and the brewery actually paid him to do this event because you brought in people to drink beer.
Sure.
And I was like,
it's a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, I should open a business if someone's going to pay me to come to a bar and drink beer.
Yeah, you're going to do it anyways. You might as well make money at it.
Yeah, what am I doing on this poker thing?
It sounds like you've been moving up the poker ladder, of course, for in terms of buy-ins and where you can play. Now, you're also moving up your social ladder here. Adam Levy's a legend, right?
Yeah, I actually, me and Adam used to play online a lot. I never knew him. And then he lives in L.A. I didn't even know that. And I feel like we randomly played in a bunch of like maybe like 3 tournaments in a row. We just kept playing together. And it was like the main event, the LAPC, a WPT in Vegas. We just kept ending up at the same table. So we ended up exchanging information and like chatting and have a decent amount in common.
Nice.
That's cool. That's cool.
What's the past year or two sitting on a table, what's like the most famous player we might know who just, you were surprised they knew who you were? I mean, you've ever sat down, like, Negreanu was like, oh, yeah, I saw you on TV, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to, like, think back when, like, when the main event aired, and there was, I'm trying to think of it was definitely in, like, a WPT or something with a lot of players, and like, hey, I've seen you before, and I was like, someone will say, oh, I've seen you on TV, and I'm always like, well, did you see me on the World Series of Poker, or you see me on Cops? Because I got away from Cops. I make a joke out of it, but I can't think off the top of my head of like the most famous person that said, oh, I saw you on TV.
I guess if Liv Bury was sending you naked selfies, you probably wouldn't tell us anyways.
Yeah, probably wouldn't. I want to keep that to myself.
Right on.
So
you've
got
some impressive scores here, man. That's pretty cool. Almost 2 mil. And your best live was over half a mil?
Steve, his bar tab's been like 2.2 million, though, over the last 5 years. So it's...
Yeah, I'm looking for backers because I'm broke because of all the partying I've done, yeah.
I was telling Mikey before he came on, I just, what I love about you, man, is you're just not afraid to win. You don't care who the opponent is. You just want to take it down.
Yeah.
And
Well, there's,
you know, you've even said like, I don't care if I bubble. I just want to accumulate on the bubble. If I go out, fine. If not, then I got a big stack.
Yeah, that was, I guess I'm always going to be known for that, especially like the very little TV time I had on like on ESPN or whatever is the one hand they show is just me bluffing off like, you know, 8 million at 240,000 big blind to the guy that won the tournament. So I guess I'm always going to be known for that.
He had ace queen, right? Called you with ace high, or
he called me with ace high on the flop and the turn, and he got there on the river. And I was, I'll never forget that hand, because I was on the river. I was like, he's got to have like jacks or queens here. I just got to give up on the river. And the river is an ace, and I just couldn't help myself.
I respect that, man. You went for it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess going for it's like, you know, I've tweaked my game since then, because you can't always go for it. People never fold anymore. But at the same time, you know, I'm just going to still go for it.
Yeah. Well, I think he folds like, you know, like you said, those other hands that he could have.
Yeah, it was that's a memorable hand for sure.
Yeah.
If we could, Scott, I don't know how long, but I've been talking about how tournaments are stupid increasingly over the last couple of years, not coincidentally when my results have been very bad.
I can vouch for that.
But I mean, I don't see how anybody survives doing this. So you would be an example of someone who does. I mean, do you also, before we even get into like your live tournament stuff, are you grind quite a bit online too? I mean, do you still have to grind hard to kind of make things work?
No, I don't play online as much as I should. I really should be playing 3-4 days a week, but I'm sporadic with it. And right now I'm probably playing once every 2 weeks. It's really,
okay.
I should be grinding online. I don't know. It gets away from me and I don't.
You just don't enjoy it as much as life?
I guess I just get stuck where, yeah. Yeah, I guess I don't enjoy it as much as live. And like, I played so much online poker in my early 20s. And I'm not saying I'm sick of it or anything. I just, for some reason, I don't play as much anymore.
It's harder to stay on top of that, isn't it? There's always these little trends, and like ACR is just very Euro infested now, I think. Right? Is that a fair assessment? Or
that's a fair assessment, yeah. And I guess I liked the way the structures were and everything was like a freeze out back in the day. And now, I mean, if you're on ACR, you got to have a big bankroll to play. The unlimited reentries will kill you.
Right. Yeah. The bots are just suck the life out of the thing too, where you just, you get the average stack when you get into the money is there. It's, you know, always 25 big blinds under now pretty much, right?
Yeah. It seems like the stalling and all that is just, it's becoming an epidemic. That's ridiculous.
Mm. Yep. I agree.
So just, I guess, you don't have to tell it. I mean, I'm just looking, you started off the year. We can go back to that quite later, but you had a big score in the 20, went very deep in the 25K PokerStars Championship for a 200K score. And then I see coming up, you got some like final tables and ninths and 10ths and 13ths and a big one. Is this been a good year, or is it kind of frustrating? Just trying to gauge of what is a good year for a full-time tournament dude.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the year started so hot with that, you know, the 25K. I mean, I've never played a 25K buy-in before, and that was probably one of the first times I'm nervous, because when you physically hand $25,000 to someone and they just give you a little receipt with a, you know, that hurt a little bit. So
that's a stinger.
Yeah,
I gave you 25K. You gave me a piece of paper.
Yeah, but then when I sat down in that tournament, I was like, oh my god, there's so many people that, you know, are not good at poker. I was worried I was going to be sitting down with a bunch of crushers, but that tournament was super unique, and like that kind of kicked off the year really good. And I guess I haven't probably been playing as much, but yeah, it seems to be one of those years where I'm getting close. I think I won a tournament for, you know, $7,000, and I was like, that's not gonna help. I need to win one for 100. But you know, a couple close calls. I think I got 13th in a 5K WPT at the Gardens there in Southern California, and then over the summer I got 10th in a 1K with 2,500 people, and that was one of the, you know, I haven't got 10th in a while in a tournament, and that stung pretty hard.
I mean, if you don't have, like a 40K plus score over the next 6 months, is it panic time, or you're pretty good with bankroll and all that stuff where you can deal with being on the wrong side of variance for a while?
Oh yeah, I can be on the wrong side of variance for a long time. I'll be fine.
Okay. Well, that's very cool.
Good for you, man.
So the go back to the 25K is, yeah, this has been my kind of theory with sort of the bigger buy-in tournaments. Not that in a lot of, it's like your opening table are often, you're going to have some bad players, or you're going to be astounded at a big buy-in. But they're gone pretty quickly, aren't they? In these bigger buy-ins where, like, by day two, you're dealing with nothing but pros? Or is that maybe overly generalizing, but...
No, that's kind of accurate. I think that tournament specifically, there was so many people that took a shot at the 25K, or they gave, you know, they gave away seats, ran satellites, all that. So at the end of day two, I remember looking around and the table filled up with everyone that could play. You know, there was no more spots. There was no one to pick on anymore. You know, the people, some of the nits that made it to day two with a decent stack, they just dwindled away and lost. Yeah. By the end of the day, I knew, you know, seven of the nine players at the table. So,
okay.
I think that, yeah, that kind of was the situation. The bubble took so long in that tournament too. On day three is when we made the money. And I actually was really short. I had like 8 to 12 big ones on the bubble. So after the bubble like bursted, I actually ran on a little rush and then, you know, had a decent stack. And in that tournament was definitely weird because when they brought in the shot clock and when you made the money, the pay jumps were so big. You know, they started off being like 5,000 and 10,000 and they were 20 and 30 grand with the pay jumps. So with that shot clock, it seemed that a lot of people were just using the shot clock when we were on the money jump. So yeah. It made the tournament super shallow at the end.
Huh.
And I got to say, I might've been guilty of it taking, you know, 25 of the 30 seconds. Cause I was like, well, if one more person gets knocked out and I get 30 more grand, I'll wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your bust out hand? You get it in good or?
I got it in ace nine suited to two fives and I did not hit an ace or nine.
Huh,
right. I had like,
I don't know the specifics.
I had like seven or eight bigs. Yeah. I just.
Pretty standard stuff.
Yeah. It was a standard situation.
Cool.
You start, when you get down to the final two tables and do the redraw, do you start seeing the 5 million in your head or you're too focused on what's going on there?
I was too focused on what's going on. I guess it's like an aftermath. You know, after I busted that tournament and they paid me, and it didn't hit me until we actually went back to one of the nicer rooms at Atlantis, like the Cove. They have, you get nicer rooms, like free rooms if you're 7-star. So a couple of buddies were 7-star. We were playing Yahtzee and having some drinks. And someone's like, man, how do you feel about getting like, you almost won $8 million. You almost won $5 million. I think that's when it hit me. I was like, well, thanks, asshole. Now, now that you mention it, I should be on a beach drinking a pina colada somewhere.
Right.
Not playing Yahtzee with you assholes. Oh, that's great, man. That's great. How old are you, Scott?
31.
Oh, that's fun.
Good
for you. Yeah, speaking of, you said you're actually hungover today. Is that rare? I mean, are you getting old? Were the drinking days where you know, 5 years ago, nothing could get you hungover, and now you get up and you're like, oh, I might have to take a day off.
I've definitely like pulled back the reins on the drinking. I'm not hungover very often, but I don't know. Like, we came down to LA and we started drinking around like 2-3. So a couple beers happened and then enough beers at that bar that caught up with me. But no, I'm typically not hungover much anymore. You know, once every 3 weeks or so, I'll have like a bad hangover. I don't know.
Did that have anything to do at which event? You'll probably know where David Tuckman would not stop talking about your drinking at the final table. Do you know what?
David Tuckman?
Yeah, because they kept you were railing somebody in like a final table event. I was watching this on Poker Go.
Oh, I know.
He's like, about Scott Stewart, I think he just pounded another one. How much? He was getting bored with the poker and was becoming more interested in exactly how many beers you could consume.
You know what it was? It was the this year at the World Series, it was the 50K Players Championship. A friend, Phil Huey, he ended up winning the tournament, but we were wrecking him down pretty good. So I think it was Nick Schulman, Ali Najad, and we just had like a row.
Those two guys. Okay.
Like eight to 10 beers just like on the rail right there. And yeah, I was ripping them pretty good. So I think that's what it was.
So I don't know if your drinking is that legendary, if they were just looking for a comic opportunity, but that was interesting. I was watching that looking and they kept turning the camera over to you and drinking. I'm like, okay, he's drunk. I get it. Let's watch the poker here.
Yeah. That's what happens when it's all limit poker. When it's limit stud high low, they need something else to talk about.
That's true. That's funny. How was I'm just trying to look here. I see Atlantic City. You just must have returned from pretty recently here.
Yeah, actually, I went to Atlantic City once when I was 21, and you know, I haven't been back in 10 years because it's Atlantic City. But I went to New York for the first time with some friends and stayed there for 3 days, and then a buddy, actually his parents live out there, so he just borrowed one of their cars and we drove down to Atlantic City for the Borgata. And I've actually never, the first time I went to Atlantic City, I never been in the Borgata, and the Borgata is really nice. And they also opened a new Hard Rock in Atlantic City. We stayed there 2 nights, and that was actually a really nice casino as well.
I love those Borgata. I love the Borgata.
Yeah.
I love that massive poker room and just,
incredible tournament. I mean, it was like 1200 people in this tournament.
Yeah.
They get crazy turnouts for sure.
Yeah, they always start off their tournament series with some ridiculous, like, $2 million guarantee with like a $500 buy-in or something, and they always seem to hit it too, for sure.
Yeah, it gets thousands of people. I know what you're talking about. I wasn't there for that, but I know the tournament you're talking about.
What are some of your like traveling tips for keeping it economical when you're bouncing around cities like this?
You know, usually when I kind of pick the poker stops that like to be at, like, you know, Denver, Tahoe, those kind of places I enjoy being at without poker. Yeah. But the places that I'm hitting, I'm going either with friends that have, you know, comp rooms or it's cheaper stays. I think that I don't have a gambling problem or anything. I have like a diamond card, but I have a couple friends that are 7-star, and we always kind of penny pinch as far as staying somewhere. So, I think it's definitely not sustainable to travel around the country playing $400 or $500 buy-ins, you know, if you have to pay for a hotel everywhere you go, it's gotta be expensive.
Yeah.
Those 7-star guys must see like rooms in these hotels that like, I wouldn't even know exist. Like, does the Rio have like really exotic, cool suites there other than they're just standard suites that I've been staying in for 5 years, I wonder?
They have like, it'd be like a 2-bedroom suite. One room is just like the 2 beds. And then there's like the other room is a huge common area with like a table, a couch, TV. It's nothing too extravagant. I've been in a couple of pretty cool suites at Caesars, like the Rain Man suite, like from the movie Rain Man. I stayed in that with a friend of mine, Kyle Cartwright, for like 2 nights. And that was incredible.
Nice.
So they exist, but I've only been in a couple of them.
That's more than I've been in.
Right.
That's cool. That's cool. Right on. What do you do as far as food? So like you try to get someplace cheap. Are you always staying like where you're playing, or are you kind of doing like an Airbnb off site where at the kitchen and stuff? Like what's your,
it depends. Usually I'm on the road, I'm eating horribly. It's just like, you know, I'm especially certain casinos, they just don't have a healthy option, unfortunately. Yeah. So what comes to mind every time I go to Tunica, it's just like, there's, down in the South, there is no option to eat healthy. There's a burger place and a steakhouse. And so I live off burgers and steak for a week. It's probably taking years off my life, but it's so good.
But it's not
like it's not like you're eating nothing but summer salads in Vegas, though, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, yeah, we're yeah, it seems like every time the Vegas, you know, the summer Vegas trip comes around, you eat healthy for the first 5 to 7 days, and then, you know, after 10 tournaments, you're just like, I want a burger. I want In-N-Out Burger right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's always, even the people you stay with,
delicious.
You always, it's like the people you stay with will buy healthy food and you'll have it in the house. So you're cooking healthy, you're eating healthy, you're drinking properly. You're not, you know, you're not pounding down alcohol. And then it just 10, 12 days in or something like that, it just goes to shit. There's no way around it.
You still got just speaking about your age, I would think this is the kind of time where maybe some of these guys who've been traveling poker pros for 10 years having fun are like stepping out of it a little bit, or maybe, you know, it's funny. I ran into Danny Illingsworth a few months ago and I was asking him poker. He's like, well, I'm playing a lot of cash now, which to me is always the rational thing to do.
Yeah.
Are you losing any other, are people stepping out of your, that world, you think, for practical reasons?
Yes, I think a lot of people get, one, sick of traveling, two, you know, get married and have kids, or three, just find that it's not sustainable to make enough money to do it.
Sure.
And even, I guess no one like really in my inner circle is kind of having that issue. You know, like they're not getting tired of it. But I do, you know, some people I travel with, every year I see them, they go, oh, I'm going to start playing cash and I don't want to play tournaments anymore. But year in and year out, they keep showing up and they keep playing the tournaments.
It's too much fun. Yeah.
But you definitely, you know, the people you see for 7-8 years, they slowly get away from it. They either play cash or they get a job or they, you know, they get wifed up and start having kids go in that direction. I do see it a decent amount.
I don't know.
What do you think about this, the cheating scandal here? Are you a Twitter social media guy or?
I am. I'm on all forms of social media. And actually I didn't hear about this until Sunday. What's today? Wednesday? No, Monday, Sunday or Monday, whatever day. The first time I heard about it, I don't know how long it's been out there, but yeah, me and some friends, like we came down here in LA and we watched a couple videos and it even came up last night at the bar. We're watching a couple hands and a couple things. And I mean, I guess people that know poker, it's just no question that this guy is cheating. I don't know how, but right. He knows the cards, the hands that are happening are outrageous. You know, even we watched a little clip last night of, it was three way to a flop and it was like King 8-3 with two hearts. The guy that, you know, the accused cheater had ace king. One guy had a set and one guy had a flush draw, and somehow it went like bet, and then the guy with the set went all in, and he somehow folded ace king to like a very loose player, which, you know, I guess you can make some hero folds every once in a while, but if you watch the hand, you know, watch the video, watch the situation, it's an unfoldable hand. You just can't fold
right. Well, he's also calling off like $3,000 with second pair.
Right.
So here, you know what I mean? So it's quickly Steve, since Steve doesn't really follow this stuff. We had Veronica.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering.
We had Veronica on actually like a month ago. And who, the Stones who, Live.
Who's Steve, Veronica?
Veronica Brill, Angry Pollock. She's the one who does the commentary at Stones, and she's the one who uncovered this.
Oh, okay.
And she had been complaining to the people who run the stream. And they said, no, never mind. And of course, Steve, basically somebody, you know, there's like a 15-20 minute delay with the live stream.
Okay.
This one guy knew everyone else's cards. So somebody, they think someone in the production team certainly was either texting him or he had an earpiece in. Mm-hmm. Like people have been studying it. There's now baseball hats with like sound ears. So basically if you watch it, he knew everyone's cards.
Okay.
And Veronica, everyone to her, she stepped up and be a hero because she was telling her people at work this, and she said, fuck, I don't want to be part of this shit anymore. And she opened it up, and then everybody on Twitter started studying it. But this guy has an absurd win rate. I think someone actually broke it down where in the last 2 years, just on this stream, he's won like 63 of 67 sessions for like $260,000.
Wow.
And a lot of these are lower buy-in.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrible to look at.
Yeah, it's basically his win rate is it's impossible to do in poker. You can't.
Yeah.
He never has a bad session, which you can be a very good player. You know, you put certain players in that game and they're going to win a lot, but they're going to lose sometimes. And this guy never loses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beyond. And what makes it so ridiculous, if you listen, like he really wants, not only is he raping everyone, he really wants respect as being this sort of super wizard.
Yeah.
Who's just seeing things no one else can see.
Yeah. It's out of control. It's not even.
Yeah. It's appalling. Yeah. I mean, that's just, that's the only word for it, really. It's,
that's sad.
And, Carlos, of course, was fat. Me and him have been texting back. He's fascinated by it. And it's arguable which is the most ridiculous one. There's one where he says he didn't like the turn cards. Like, oh, where it looks like the safest turn card in the world, but the other guy had picked up a gut shot.
Yeah.
Like he's actually been responding to the other guy's hand, even though they were down.
You know, I know what you're talking about. It's out of control. He almost had a slip up. I mean, it was a slip up, you know, it was like, oh no, I got you dead, but oh wait.
There's a couple of times he's like, I'm good. And would like turn over third pair. And I guess the one I didn't see too, he also called with pocket kings. He called a C bet on an ace high board with five people in the pot.
Oh, wow.
Somebody said that was just, and then he called the turn too. I mean, to someone who's usually almost always has an ace. So Yeah, maybe we can get Veronica on, Steve. I'm sure she's probably getting interviewed a million places, but it's what everyone in the poker world's talking about right now.
Okay, all right. Maybe I should step up to the times here.
Other than Fireman Steve here, and never knows what the fuck's going on.
Right on. Well, Scott, when I called you, it was music to my ears. You said something to the effect of, what was that thing we were talking about the last time we were on the show, a Roth something? And I said, yes.
Oh, Roth.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I just remember you telling me you read a book and you're just like, oh yeah, it's like if you invest this amount of money over, you can retire early. I just remember, and it kind of like fell off that I never asked you about it. When you said it was a Roth IRA, I was like, oh yeah, of course I have a Roth IRA. But I guess I'm interested to talk about that maybe tomorrow or the next day when my head doesn't hurt.
Oh, well, I got a bunch of notes here.
You got your wires crossed, Steve. He thought you said Roth IPA, and he said, yes, I'd like one of those, please.
Yeah, you're a real comedian, Mike, real comedian.
Well, so you already have a Roth IRA?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Poker players don't like talking about their finance, Steve. That's like pretty... I'm the only idiot who goes on there and talks about my debt management.
Oh, is this taboo?
Well. No, every poker player should know that you can put $5,500 in a Roth IRA that's non-taxable. Everyone should know that.
Yeah, there's two of them. There's pre-tax and post-tax, and this one's going to be a post-tax. So you pay taxes on it already, and everything you make in there is yours. All the interest, all the compounded interest, everything. But yeah, I like them a lot.
Whenever Steve hears the word compound interest, he gets hard. So just don't get freaked out by it.
I just hear free money. That's all I hear.
He might start breathing heavily next.
That's all I hear is free money.
Yeah.
They upped it to $6,000 this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You can put an extra $500 over the course of a year.
Oh, that's good.
But, I dig it.
So what's coming around the corner here for poker? What's your next WPT big tournament? Or
I will be in. So last year was the first year I went to Jacksonville. It's a 5K WPT, and each table has a $2,500 bounty. So if you knock out like the bounty at the table, you get $2,500 cash.
Wow!
So it was the tournament actually really fun last year, and then where it's at in Jacksonville is pretty close to a beach. And I actually was, I think I was already on the East Coast. I met a friend down there and we ended up spending like a week on the beach, and there was a little cool beach town, some very tasty restaurants and like almost like bars on the beach. That's the one thing I'll never understand about California is why we don't have a bar every 2 miles on the beach, on the sand. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've always wondered about that. I assume it's, all these little cute beach towns are trying to keep their beaches from being touched. Probably environmental reasons too. There might be like state laws.
Right. That makes the most sense. But yeah, I'll be, I'm going down to Jacksonville for that, on the 10th this month. I'll be there for a week. And then after that, I'll drive up the coast and go to Tahoe, which is like my favorite stop of the year.
The Run It Up Reno. Is that where you're going for?
There's the Run It Up Reno is right before it. So I think I will go to Reno for maybe the opening weekend, opening week of Run Up Reno, but maybe their last weekend. They have a couple of cool tournaments, and the place they run it at, the Peppermill, is actually a really nice casino. They got a cool sports book with like a lot of nice TVs. It's a newer casino that's run very well.
Okay, yeah, I played at the Peppermill. When was the last time I played there? It's probably, oh shit, it's been a while. It's been like 6 to 8 years.
Oh, yeah. I think they've updated it since then. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll do the last week of Run It Up Reno, and then it's like an hour drive or hour and a half drive to Tahoe from there. And then South Lake Tahoe, it's funny. There's a street, this street where you have Nevada and California, the state line. And then right on the other side of that street is like 3 or 4 casinos.
Oh, perfect.
Exactly. And it's like the most beautiful stop. I think I'm probably going to retire in Tahoe one day. It's really awesome up there.
Very nice. Cool. Are you, will you ever outgrow the circuit? I mean, is that I don't know if that's a stupid question, but like if you go to a circuit event, there's a bunch of $300 and $500 events here. Not that you're overrolled for it, but I'm guessing in like Jacksonville, like beyond the main event, they probably got their side events are a little pricier, a little more equity there.
They actually in Jacksonville, they had like last year we went a week before. I'm getting there as the main event starts because it starts the 11th. But last year they did have like some, you know, they had a little reentry weekend, and then throughout the week they had like $350 and $500 buy-ins. So they do have like a smaller series that leads up to the main event. But yeah, I think that kind of what you're asking is like, am I ever going to stop playing those kind of tournaments? And I don't think I'll ever, like, they're just bankroll builders for me.
Sure.
For anyone, yeah. It's, you know, if you're going to learn how to play a $400 buy-in with 100 people, you should do well if you're a professional poker player playing those. And I don't think I'll ever outgrow them. Like if there's a good tournament in LA or somewhere I like to travel, I'll go up for, you know, a couple $400 buy-ins and hang out and play.
Okay. Nice.
So you don't need a, well, of course there's a lot of value in the main events from these circuit things. So those enough are probably a good pull, obviously.
Right. And I think some people will just, you know, certain professionals will only travel for like the main event, which is a $1,700 buy-in, or, you know, they'll only travel for the main event of World Poker Tours or anything like that. But I'll go like if it's somewhere I like to go, I don't mind going for a week or 2 weeks up to a place, play some smaller tournaments and check out the area.
That's cool.
That's cool.
When was your last circuit ring here? Was it, are you stuck on five, or you moved up?
I'm stuck on five.
Oh dear.
That's what we call a high quality problem there, Scott.
Right. I think I have a couple seconds after that, and seconds always sting.
First world problems.
I don't know. I think it was last year. I'm sure you're being honest. I asked you if you study poker, and you said you're not a real studier, but you must adjust well to little changes in the poker. Like, how would you say your game's different or better today than it was a year or two ago?
I think, and yeah, to that point, I really should study, and like, I feel like I've been for a year. A good friend of mine, he's actually in the hotel room. We came down with him and his girlfriend. He really learned PLO and kind of like, you know, that it seems like the next step in poker, where the more PLO you play, the better your hold'em game is. And I feel like for a year I've been saying I'm going to learn PLO and actually become good at it, but I haven't done it. But yeah, with hold'em too, I've never studied, but I guess, yeah, it's over the years you'll adapt to what people are doing. And I guess for me, adapting is, I feel like I've been playing more better structured tournaments, and you learn more discipline when you do that. Just folding in spots that sometimes you wouldn't do, or not taking a higher risk in a lower buy-in tournament where the structure is not as good. So I guess that's kind of the only thing that's changed over the last year or two for me.
Come on, Stevie, come up with something else. Yeah. Steve, you said you're prepared for this. All you had is one dumb question about Roth IRAs.
Oh, I thought we were going to go into detail on it. So I had all stuff written out.
You got a girlfriend?
No, no girlfriend.
How do you meet chicks on these fucking trips?
Yeah.
Yes, you got the free. You got the. You mean is it nothing but strip clubs, man? I mean, it's just so.
There's no judgment here. Neither one of us have girlfriends either. So.
No, I.
I'm wondering if you've learned any tricks that you could pass on to a couple of aging tigers in the background.
No, I'm not a strip club guy. You know, I would say in my early 20s we used to go to a place called the Library that had Taco Tuesday and $2 you call it. So that's probably the last time I was a regular at a strip club. But yeah, on the road, depending where you are, it's just such a male-dominated profession that it is hard to meet women. And then, you know, the little women that are around, everyone's like, you know, every dude's trying to hit on her, and I'm sure she's sick of it. So I guess depending if you go out in the city, wherever you are, in like a downtown area or something, there's always opportunity to meet, depending on who you're with. And then dating apps are still a thing, you know, you got them all out there. I'm on them.
Sure.
Yeah. Which ones, do you find that some of the apps are more popular in certain areas than other ones are?
Yeah, they are. It's just like, I feel like, for example, when you go down somewhere in the South, Tinder, mm-hmm. Tinder's more popular there. And then in California, I would say like Bumble and Hinge. Those are the only three I use. So
okay.
I feel like in the Western, I got someone in the background saying I use Grindr. That is untrue.
I don't know. I mean, I wanted to make that joke, but I just don't know Scott well enough. And he looks like he could, you know, I might catch him on a bad day and get a right hook, you know?
But yeah, it's, you know, it's challenging being in this line of work and meeting women. I mean, they're out there just, you know, even like the dating world, I'm sure you guys know if you're single, the dating world's changed nowadays. It's hard to meet women. You know, where are you going to meet them at? You know, walk into a bar? No, you guys are in your 40s, right? That's probably not happening anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It has changed. The game has completely changed, and it's moved to these apps.
Yeah.
And I mean, there still are opportunities to meet them out in the real world, but I feel like these apps, and you can kind of narrow them down pretty quickly too. Like you create this environment where you're only talking to women that you're attracted to.
Yeah, you know? It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Right on. Cool. When is the Tahoe one? Is it at the same time as the Run It Up Reno? Or you said Run It Up Reno is just before and then they do the Tahoe? Like when are you?
Yeah. So basically I haven't looked at the scheduling, but the end of Run It Up Reno is, I want to say, like around the 23rd, 24th. I'm not looking at a calendar right now, but what typically happens is the end of Run It Up Reno, that main event weekend, is like the opening weekend of the WSOP circuit, where they have like the big reentry. So they have like three or four flights for the WSOP circuit, and that weekend is the main of the Run It Up Reno. So I'll probably play the Run It Up Reno, hang out that weekend in Reno, and then drive up to Tahoe, you know, that Monday or Sunday.
Okay.
I'm boycotting Tahoe, Steve, by the way.
Yeah, you want a ring there, Mike. How can you boycott it?
Per my suggestion, I wanted the PLO event to be called the Snipman Invitational.
Yeah, Mike, you definitely don't know how to play PLO. You had to luck box that tournament, right?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
For sure. I did not play.
And there was there more than 14 people in the tournament?
No, it was very small. There was like 60 or something, I think. Yeah, it was pretty.
I thought it was like 80 or 90, wasn't it?
I'd have to look. No, it was less than that.
Oh, okay.
Steve, it doesn't matter.
Still, that was fun. I'll never forget when you won that tournament.
I got lucky for the first 19 and a half hours, but it was pure genius the last three hands. That's all. Yeah.
I feel like we end up talking about Tahoe every time I come on this podcast. And like, Mike, I know I've seen you up there. I don't know if you're going up there again. And then, even I've told you, Steve, I feel like you said you have a plane, or you have access to a plane where you can fly right in Tahoe. I feel like we discussed that one time.
I did. Was that last year, Mikey, or the year before?
I've only been to Tahoe once. It was the year
before. Whenever you went, I went up there. When was that? 2 years ago or 1 year ago?
I think it was two. Tahoe is nice. I'm sure, especially this time of year, there's a lot to do and it's still warm enough to go out during the day and go boating and shit probably too, right? I don't know.
Yeah, we actually, I've never been out on the lake before, but someone we met, he actually lives in Tahoe and then plays a bunch of cash games. His name's Jared Mangini. I can't remember his last name or pronounce his last name properly, but he actually owns a business where you can rent a boat and take it out on the lake.
Oh, so perfect.
We kind of met him. I met him last year in Tahoe, and then I've seen him around. So he told, like, he ends up kind of knowing the same people I know. And he's like, yeah, man, if you guys come up, we'll take a, you know, the nicest boat out on the lake for a day, which sounds very awesome. And I'm probably going to do that.
And that's something that you should take him up on.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that 100%.
Yes. It's always best not to own a boat, but to have friends who own boats.
Exactly. I don't want to keep that. Every time I win over $10,000 in a poker tournament, my roommate's girlfriend goes, you need to buy a boat. And I'm like, oh, this, and you know what happens? She always brings it up around the right people when we're out having, you know, having dinner, having lunch, out drinking, whatever. And everyone goes, yeah, Scott, you should buy a boat. We want to go on your boat.
See,
I don't
they want a friend who has a boat.
I don't want to pay to maintain a boat. I don't know enough about boats.
if you had won the PCA million, what would be your most exotic pimp style investment though?
I would have bought a boat.
You would have bought a boat. Okay.
I actually have no idea. I probably would just invest it in real estate. I'd buy a couple houses and then $5 million.
Collect rent.
$5 million. I might be able to afford a house in California. Maybe.
might be able to find one
pretty
or two.
Expensive. Yeah.
Probably could buy a nice motorcycle with a little side seat for Brett Murray, the chasing down the street. That would 700 pounds of.
You know, Brett, I don't know if you've seen Brett lately. He lost like 50 pounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did he give it to you?
I'll send you. I got the funniest picture if I can find it. We were actually in Tahoe a couple of years back, and we were across the street. There's a place called the Lucky Beaver, and they have really good burgers. And we're out there drinking with everyone. And, you know, Brett's like a big teddy bear. And I ended up being like, you know what, Brett, I'm going to be your bodyguard tonight. So we got a couple funny pictures of me trying to be Brett's bodyguard. And it doesn't proportion out correctly. He's too tall.
Right. Brett, by the way, isn't necessarily, he's not fat. He's just like 6'10" and just a massive dude, you know. So the sidecar of the motorcycle, for those who know him, would be a, yes. If I have to explain the joke, I guess it's not a good one. But
yeah, it would be like the Three Stooges, but you know, he'd be weighing down the sidecar and it'd just be, it'd be pretty funny.
Right on. Cool. Do you ever play cash at all, or is it just only tournaments? I mean, like, you never find yourself I don't know, 10 hours a month or something, just maybe not even that?
No, I never play. The only time I play cash is when I'm on a trip and we're staying far enough away from wherever we're playing that I've already busted the tournament and the person I'm waiting on has the car. Yeah. I have to kill 1 to 6 hours and I'll play cash then, but I just never got into playing cash. I don't know what it is.
It's too, like, I like with the tournaments how it's always changing. You know, the blind levels are always changing. People are coming in and out faster. Like, there's just so many different scenarios, you know, the push fold and then you're out, you know, like it, I like it. They just feel so dynamic to me, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
And you can make a lot of money in just a couple of days. You can't do that in cash. So
yeah.
Right. I guess cash feels somewhat like a job to me, like you're grinding it out, getting it. And I know, you know, over the long run, you're probably going to win and there's not as much variance, but it never brought me in to play enough cash. I can't explain. I just never got into it.
Yeah. 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 Right on.
You had any overseas trips? I'm looking here. When are we going to play a couple of EPTs? Is that anything on the horizon? Any kind of like real ambitious poker trips coming up, you think? Or,
well, the PCA is no more. That was like going to the Bahamas is one of my favorite things to do every year. I am flirting with the idea of going to the Aussie Millions in Australia. Which, yeah, I know I guess it's the 10th month now, so I got like 3 months to figure that out, but some of my friends are interested and that might happen.
What's the buy-in to that? Like 15 or 25?
I think it's 10,000 Australian, which I think it equates to like something like
83.
Around. Yeah, like 8,500, 8,300, something like that.
They'll have a lot of tournaments though too. So
yeah, they have a lot of tournaments and I've never been to Australia and heard good things. So it would be.
I've never been either, my friend. Sounds
that,
like fun.
Is that near the ocean? Where it takes place?
I'm sure it does. I want to say it's in Melbourne. I think there's a different one that they run in Sydney, but this one's in Melbourne.
Okay.
Which I don't know if that's close to the ocean or not.
Now, will you be selling a package for this trip?
For the Aussie Millions trip, or
for Aussie? Yeah.
Probably. I'll probably package something together, like, and sell like 20-30% of it.
Okay. Can I get a possible future investment?
You will be the, I'll be the, I'll text you first, Steve. How about that?
Okay, cool. Right on.
What do you mean the PCA is just, that's done with? I'm not even aware of that.
Yeah. I want to say like a month or two ago, they announced that they're no longer having that tournament. It's I think it was like 15 or 16 years in the making too. They had a long stint with it, but it is no more.
Wow, that's surprising. Yeah.
And I guess
kind of thought that would be around forever, but
yeah, I would say the same thing. It's a bummer that it's gone. I think I only went three times, but it was a blast all three times we went. You know, I guess I don't know how long you've been doing it, but you know, if you're a diamond or seven star, you get 4 free days there.
Wow.
Yeah. So you get to stay at the Atlantis Resort for free. And so it's, you know, you have one or two friends, you stack them, you do 4 nights with someone's card, then the next 4. So
yeah.
Yeah. I stayed 8 days the 2 years prior. And then this year I stayed 12 days because we had a third friend. It was awesome.
And what do you do for that diamond star thing?
It's a Caesars property. You just have to get 15,000 points, which you can get in a couple of different ways, either by gambling, playing video poker is probably the most common way.
And you do max bet to rack up the and you play perfect strategy, right? Over the long run.
Exactly. There's also something called the Founders Club. You can pay $400 to get a diamond card.
Oh.
Yeah. So like if you're traveling a circuit or going, you know, traveling enough to go to, you know, Harrah's and Horseshoe and Caesars, they seem to have, you know, a lot of the circuit events and things like that. Just you save the resort fees on a diamond card, and that alone, if you're traveling the circuit, will pay for itself over the first 3 months.
Okay.
Yeah. The resort fees are like $32 or something. They're crazy.
Yeah. I got a credit card. I can't remember which property it's for, but I get free parking. I had to put $5,000 on it. But now I get free parking for the whole year, and I just do it in a month or two or whatever and pay a few bills with it, and then it's done. But the parking was stupid. I remember playing a $400 tournament at the Aria, and I bubbled the thing and then came out and had to pay $17.50 for parking. I'm like, F this place. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. I had the same thing happen at the Wynn, but the Wynn, it was like $26. it was unbelievable. I think I even like cashed in the tournament. I might have won a little money. And I still went. I like went back inside and tried to get a comp. Talked to different people. You know, it's amazing when I'll go throw away $1,000 of blackjack, but a $26 mm-hmm. parking fee, I'll fight to the end of the earth to get a comp. Yes. I never want to pay it.
Running bad in Vegas is horrible. Just for like some of the cost stuff, you know, the first time you get that $9 Corona, you know, after busting a $1,000 tournament, you're like, what the fuck? Get me out of here.
Yeah. That's true.
This is now your 7 stars buddies. And this is non-judgmental coming from a gambler. Some of them, probably are losing a lot of money sometimes gambling.
Yeah. That's true.
Is that ever uncomfortable for you? Maybe you're, because they, since you're properly rolled and sounds like pretty fiscally responsible, you're the one, sometimes you're the one only guy with money in the room, right? Does that happen?
You know what, I got three friends that have 7 star. One gets it by like, I guess not enough people listen to this, I'm not gonna say not enough people listen to this podcast, but he gets it by playing like there's like the online craps. I'm thinking like you can play craps by pushing buttons.
Yeah.
Right. And he gets extra points by doing that, but it's like a break even thing. It's called bubble craps. That's what I'm looking for. It's called bubble craps. Like he's not a gambler at all, but he found a niche to get that 7 star card.
Okay. Yeah. He's doing what we would do with video poker, just playing perfect strategy. And in the long run, you break even.
Exactly. So
yeah.
That's how one friend's getting it, and then the other two will gamble and get the 7 star. And like, they're both very well off, so it's never going to hurt them.
Okay.
But at the same time, every once in a while, I'll watch them lose tens of thousands of dollars, and it's just it hurts me, you know.
Yeah.
When you see someone lose a house in the Midwest gambling, that hurts.
Sure.
Yeah.
Plain cash. I see. Luckily, it's like under 5% of the people there who I feel like are really doing serious damage to their economic and therefore emotional, mental well-being by playing poker.
Very true. I know what you
mean. In the pits, that number is significantly higher for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, people, I've seen friends with just the gambling problem, and it's, you know, when you're like, man, you just, there's no way you can win right now. Let's just leave. And they just some chemical in their brain's going, nope, I'm going to try to get it back no matter what.
Yeah. They just hemorrhage more.
Exactly.
I wonder if there's any, you ever seen anyone in that world kind of just, cause you gotta, you know, poker's hard. You gotta work hard for your money, who just like they're gamblers and then they just stop gambling and only poker. Is that even a something that can be done or?
Yeah, no, I've seen someone, yeah, that was, they would gamble. And then, you know, I'm sure they lost all their money and then eventually won it back in poker. And they finally just clicked to them. They just don't gamble ever again. Just quit cold turkey, because I'm sure they lost every dollar they had and then came back, started winning in poker. And like, okay, they found out the leak and they plugged it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Good for them. Whoever that is. I have a new hero.
Do you ever bet sports, Scott?
Yeah, whenever I bet sports, I lose. So, I think I get like a yearly reminder where I want to play a couple games and then I lose and I go, oh yeah, that's why. Cause I never win. But I mean, I feel like I know the lines of games and stuff. I try not to bet much, but football season is my favorite sport. So I find myself betting on the Carolina Panthers and losing every year.
That's right.
Yeah. Cam is, less than ideal.
Yeah, he's done.
How'd you become a Panthers fan anyways? You grew up in California, right?
Yeah, born and raised California. I despise the Chargers and everything they're about. And then, you know, growing up, we didn't have an L.A. team. We just had the Chargers. And I never liked the Chargers, never liked anything about them. And I guess when I was a kid, I liked the Panther colors and was rooting for them one year. And this is the year they made it to the Super Bowl. In 2004, and my dad randomly got tickets to that Super Bowl in Houston. So my dad spent like 20 years in Houston in his, I want to say, 20s and 30s. And so we went down to Houston, stayed with some of his friends. We sat 11 rows up in the Patriot end zone. And the entire section we were in, the Carolina Panthers owner bought out the entire section.
Wow.
Yeah, so we got the tickets from – like a family friend was dating the mascot for the Carolina Panthers. So we got the tickets for face value, $500. And these tickets were probably like $2,500, $3,000 seats at the time.
So yeah.
We paid the $500, went to the game, and I'm a fan for life after going to that Super Bowl.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because it was
pretty cool.
It was a really good game. The Panthers were down, and they came back like a roaring comeback in the second half, tied the game with like 40 seconds left, and then the kicker – kicked the ball out of bounds, so the Patriots got the ball on the 40, and Tom Brady had to go like, you know, 35 yards, and then Vinatieri kicked the field goal, and my dreams are over.
That was a close one. Yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah.
Jake Delhomme, as Stuart Scott used to call him.
Yep, Jake Delhomme, man. That was a fun game. It was a very cool thing to be at, and like that's still in like the top three things I've ever done. That Super Bowl, and I'll be a Panther fan for life.
I might have to put that in my dating profile, Steve. Looking for a lonely mascot. They got connections, man. Yeah, it didn't even occur to me.
Yes. You know, the funny part about
I think
this,
we should focus on maybe some of the cheerleaders instead, Mike. Leave the mascots for someone else.
So the funny thing about that story, too, is the girl that got the tickets, maybe like, I don't know how it got brought up with my dad, and my dad found out about it, but the guy she was dating said, here, I've got two free tickets to the Super Bowl. And she goes, oh, I don't like football. And just,
oh, wow.
So he gave them to someone else. And when my dad heard that, he like flipped out. He's like, you could have sold those for thousands of dollars. And then we got like, we asked the guy if he had any legs. He's like, yeah, you can pay face value, which was $500, which is a steal. So we could have got free Super Bowl tickets, but instead we had to pay $500.
She doesn't like that foosball.
Crazy, right? Isn't that, it's crazy.
Whoa. when pretty girls say dumb things.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I guess when, you know, beyond Australia, next year, I don't know when it's going to be, like what time of the year, but they're doing that same 25K buy-in in Barcelona. So I think I'm going to go to Barcelona whenever that is, because I've never been to Barcelona, and that I've heard great things about that place.
Yeah. I've been there once. It was maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The women are beautiful there.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I am very excited to go. And I feel like even that tournament next year is going to be bigger than the PCA. Because I feel like Barcelona gets a crazy pull with poker players for some reason.
I don't know. Cool. Cool. That'll be fun.
You have to. Did you have to hustle a lot for that 25K buy-in? Or you're at a point now where someone will always give you money to play poker, right? You're plus EV in pretty much any field other than maybe
rollers. Yeah. Yeah, I sold action in that tournament and like was a little nervous, but like I won't sell as much as I sold last time because I think I have a big edge in that tournament.
I know. Good. Yeah, there's got to be so many satellites, you know?
Yeah, I'll definitely put some satellites together. I'm sure PokerStars is going to have satellites. And
No, I'm saying there's got to be so many satellite entries.
Oh, yeah, there. Yeah, exactly.
Of just a Chris Moneymaker story, you know? And there's 39 of them. Maybe more, I don't know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but I don't know. Cool. Cool. That's exciting, man. I'm happy for you. This has been neat, and I'm glad you've been able to kind of come on the show, and we get a snapshot. It seems like every year, year and a half or so, and I don't feel or hear that you've lost any enthusiasm for the game. Like you're still just grinding, and you love it.
Yeah, I think it's I get sick of poker very seldomly, and when I do, I'll go back to Long Beach and hang out for a month. You know, like
right on.
I think after the summer this year, I was, I'm not saying fed up, but I was just like, oh, it was a long summer. You know, the weather was really nice this year for, surprisingly, it wasn't scorched earth hot. But
yeah,
when I got back home, I didn't play poker for, I played there. There was a 5K WPT at the Gardens right after I got the 13th. Well, I think I won like 20 some grand. And I was like, yeah, I'm probably gonna take a month off. I don't think I played poker for an entire month after that.
Cool. That's good that you can, that's just through your good planning that you're able to do that.
Yeah, I think there are people that get a little tired of it or they start running bad and they'll just play more, which I think is a horrible idea. The mindset you have to have, you know, to play full time and not get sick of it. Because if you're sick of it, you're not going to be playing correctly. There's no doubt in my mind that happens. So if I ever get a little like, oh, I'm playing a lot. Or, you know, if I'm on the road, I'm like, I'll just go home for a month and I'll figure, you know, I'll get the bug to play again. Like, I think I was home for this last trip I was on. I left 3 weeks ago and that was the first trip I did since Vegas. Like, I was back home for 2 months before I hit the road again. I was starting to get the itch like, I'm gonna go do some things. You know, I hit New York, Atlantic City, went and saw some friends in Ohio and then just got back home. And now I'm going to Jacksonville and Tahoe. And they're actually running I think in November, they're running it's going to be the WSOP circuit in Aruba. And I've been to Aruba before and we're like, you know, I'm right now comprising a crew to go down to Aruba and lay on a beach and have some pina coladas.
Nice, dude. Nice. Go feed the flamingos.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool. I did a quick Aruba trip. It was like one or two nights or something like that and just got a taste of it. But tropical, beautiful, probably everything you're imagining, just like you said.
Yeah.
But, good deal. Good deal. Right on. Well, how do you feel, Mikey?
I'm sorry. I don't have any more questions. I hope to see you in probably Vegas the next time I could see you. I actually ran into Scott at the Wynn. Yeah, that's about as funny you mentioned that. I was going to say that's about the closest I've ever seen you to frustrated with poker. We were talking about we were both having a bad summer.
Yeah, I'm getting fed up. And like even I had a, you know, at the end of the summer this year, I think I spent like 50K in buy-ins and I was down $1,700. That is the biggest win in a summer I've ever had. beside placing in the main event, you know, whatever that was, 2017. Beside that, losing $1,700 was the best summer I've ever had.
Right on.
Sounds silly, but it's true.
I don't remember the details. I think Negreanu, it might have been this year. He, you know, oh, I've got $280,000 in caches and I'm done. I'm down 50K.
Those high rollers.
He had like three final tables or something too.
Yeah, the high obviously the high rollers changed the mathematics of it quite a bit.
Yeah, very true.
Scott, thanks for stopping by, bro.
Definitely, yes. Anytime, guys. I enjoy coming on. It's always fun to catch up.
Good luck the rest of the year.
Yes, and if you guys want to follow Scott on Twitter, it's at YaboyStew. So
Don't bring your bankroll on any of those grinder dates, because some of those are kind of they're ambushes, I hear. Yeah. I mean, not from direct experience, but you know, one glass of Chardonnay, the next thing you know, the roofie, you're lying on the floor. You know, I mean, it's just
chastity belt, double locks each side should be a little bit safer.
I'm definitely having nightmares about this tonight now, for sure.
Right on. Well, thank you, Stu. I appreciate it. This was fun.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care. All righty. Well, just want to close it out here. I guess I misunderstood Scott when he wanted to talk Roth IRAs. So I'll go over it here. All right. Roth IRA. Now, I know that 75% of you are in the United States and 25% of you are outside the United States. So I did a quick little Google search to see if this is even available if you're in the UK or Australia or somewhere else. It is if you make money in the US. Now, I'm not sure if you have an online business where you can say that you're making at least $6,000 a year, you know, from US dollars. I'm not sure if that would work. You'd have to talk to a tax guy. But for the other 75% that are in the US, I would recommend this plan. It's called a Roth IRA, and that's spelled R-O-T-H-I-R-A. Okay, so Romeo Oscar Tango Hotel Space India Romeo Alpha. That was the pilot in me. Okay, as of now, as of this recording for 2019, you can contribute $6,000 a year. So that works out to be $500 a month that you can put into this Roth IRA. Now, why would you want to do this? Okay. This is the government's way of setting you up something for retirement, okay? You know, in an effort to get rid of Social Security or at least make it more manageable, they came out with a bunch of other stuff. This is one of the ones that we got, is a Roth IRA. Now, what's interesting about this one, there's two types of contributions that you can make. You can make what's called a pre-tax contribution, or you can make a post-tax contribution. Okay, so a pre-tax contribution would be something like a 401k, something that employers offer off in the U.S. They offer, some of them even have matching contributions to a 401k. But basically what that means is, let's keep the math simple and say you make $100,000 in 1 year. And you contribute $10,000 of that to your 401k. Now, this is pre-tax, so what that means is, as far as the government's concerned this year, they're not going to count the $10,000 that you put into this 401k, and they're going to say that, okay, even though you made $100,000, we're only going to tax you on $90,000 of it, because you get to deduct this $10,000 right now from having to pay taxes on it. Now, the kick is, Uncle Sam is always going to get his, so you're going to get you're going to get taxed on that $10,000 that you put into that account. You're going to get taxed on that when you withdraw from it. So when you separate employment and now you're retired and you need to draw on that money that you have from that 401k, that the pre-tax, I'm doing air quotes here, pre-tax. Now, when you go to pull out that $10,000, well, you're only going to get probably $7,000 of it because you got to pay $3,000 of taxes. Okay, so that's pre-tax. This Roth IRA is post-tax. So what that means is you get a check from your employer or from your business or however you make money, and you get $500. Well, you've already been taxed on that through your work withdrawals from your employer. They've already taken the taxes out of that. So what you have left in your paycheck, and now you put into this Roth IRA, you've already paid taxes on it, and you do not have to pay taxes again. So as the interest grows and the compound interest grows and everything that is now in this Roth IRA account, all of it is yours. Okay? So that's the difference pre-tax, post-tax. This Roth IRA is a post-tax one. We can contribute $6,000 a year in 2019, and that equates to $500 a month. Okay. Now, there's several stocks. There's five of them here that are indexes that you're going to want to purchase. Okay. And they're in specific amounts. All right. Now, this has gotten me where I got this from. I didn't just completely pull this out of my ass. I got it from a book. It's called Money Master the Game by Tony Robbins. He went around to a bunch of the most successful businessmen in America and picked their brain on finances and money. One of the things I got out of here, he interviewed a guy named Ray Dalio. I've since listened to a couple of his audiobooks. He's basically, long story short, came from nothing, and now he's the manager of billions of dollars at a hedge fund. Okay, so Tony asked him, he said, okay, for the average person who's making $100,000 a year or less, what would you recommend doing for a retirement account? And he said he would do a Roth IRA, and he would put it into these specific stocks and bonds in these specific percentages, and he would do it for as long as he was able to contribute. And if someone started that when they were young, they would have quite an account by the time they're done. So that's where I'm getting this from. And I figure if it's good enough for a hedge fund billionaire, then it's only $6,000 a year. It's good enough for me. Some of the things with this Roth IRA, you cannot touch the money until you're 59 and a half. Okay, now the average lifespan of an American male is, I think, 78 or 79 now. I think a female is like in her early 80s. Okay, so odds are you're going to live past 59 and a half. All right, so let's get that out of our mind that we may not live that long. All right, if you don't, all the money will go to your spouse or to your kids or whatever beneficiary or charity you want to give it to. So $6,000 a year. Let's see. Okay, another little point in here. There's these five stocks or funds that you're going to want to buy. I'll tell you exactly what they are here in a sec. When we buy these, we want to do something what's called dollar cost averaging. All right? Basically what that means, maybe you've heard that term before and you know exactly what it is, maybe you don't, I'll describe it here. Okay, so we could put, in theory, we could put $6,000 into this account, into this Roth IRA, January 1st. And then not touch it for the whole year. And then the next year put in $6,000, right? Okay, that would be better than doing nothing. But what would be even better than that is if we put in $1,500 in January 1st, $1,500 in, would that be March 1st, $1,500 June 1st, and then $1,500 September 1st, and you buy them on those days. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're buying $1,500 worth of these stocks in January, and then 3 months later, or I guess it would have been April, so my math is a little off. But you do it four times a year, and you set this up automatically from your bank to whatever avenue you're going to be doing this on. And dollar cost averaging is now you're getting a snapshot of the stock market in January. And you're also getting another snapshot of the stock market in April and another one and then another one, right? So you get four snapshots of the stock market and four entry points in 1 year instead of one. Now, we can probably see, because we're all poker players, we understand variance is a bitch. And wouldn't you rather, let's say you're 30 years old and you got till 59 and a half, wouldn't you rather have, okay, we'll just call it 30 years. Wouldn't you rather have, instead of 60 or instead of 30 snapshots of the market, wouldn't you rather have 120? Imagine how much less variance you would have in that. Okay, so dollar cost averaging, that's when we want to purchase these, is four times a year on a quarterly basis. And let's see, oh, some of the stipulations of this, as a single earner, you can't make more than $135,000 a year as of 2019. These numbers are going to change with time. They're going to increase. And if you're a couple, you cannot make more than $199,000 per year. Now, I have talked to people who make more than this and they still have a Roth IRA, and I don't totally understand how they're able to do that, but that's the official numbers. Okay? All right. These are the ones you want to buy in. All right. So there's going to be five different ones. You've got a pen and paper. 40% of your bankroll is going to go to long-term treasury bonds. Okay. It's, yeah, 40% into long-term bonds in U.S. Treasuries. Okay, so that's 40%. 30% is going to be in the S&P 500. Okay, so the S&P 500, it's a group of some of the, without getting too far into the weeds here, okay, you take the top 500 big, large companies, you know, things like Edison and Johnson & Johnson and like that. They've got to show a positive, they got to show positive returns over the last quarter, and they got to show a positive return over the last four quarters added together. So if they don't have a positive quarter, they're not on the list. Okay, so these are big companies that are producing well, and they're demonstrating about what 80% of the market, you know, is going to do. Okay, so you want 30% of your role in that. 15% you want in intermediate government bonds. Okay, so we had long-term government bonds, which are typically between 20 and 25 years, and then intermediate government bonds are something like 7 to 10 or 6 to 9 or something like that. Okay, so that's 15% of your role. The other 7.5 is in gold, and then 7.5 is in some type of commodity. Okay, so like corn would be a commodity. Beef would be a commodity, coffee, oil, stuff like that. Okay. Now, this may sound a little difficult, but this is very, very simple. All right. If you're in America, you can get on Vanguard. And if you want to really dumb this down, I can give you the exact ticker ones that you're going to need for the 40, 30, 15, 7.5, 7.5 percentages. All right. The exact ticker for the 40% one is Victor Golf Lima Tango, VGLT. That's the long-term treasury bonds. The ticker for the S&P 500 is Victor Oscar Oscar Golf, V-O-O-G. And the ticker for the intermediate government bonds is Victor Golf India Tango, V-G-I-T. For gold, it's GLD Golf Lima Delta. That's 7.5%. And then for the commodity that I picked, and you can pick another one, I'm looking over the life of it, and I think I'm actually going to switch to another one, but, you know, maybe you'll be buying cheap right now. Is the commodity is Victor Delta Echo, VDE. Okay. So that's basically it. You just put them in there, in those percentages. And when you first put in your first 1500, the stock prices are going to be to where you're not going to be able to get exactly down to 40% or exactly at 30%, but you try to get within those percentages as best you can. And then over years of putting this in, you can get very close to getting to 40 and 30 and 15 and 7.5 and 7.5%, because you're going to have to buy these at shares. You know, the price of one share may be $68, but to make it exactly 15%, that price needs to be 43 or something, you know, who knows. But get it as close as you can. And another important part too is your portfolio has got to be rebalanced. Okay, so by that, what I mean is, let's say the S&P 500 does very well and gold does not. When you go to do that next quarterly update, you just buy more gold, but you don't of the S&P 500 or whatever balances it out to that. You may have to sell a share of the S&P 500 or two or more. But that's fine. That's, it just makes it more efficient. You want to be by these percentages, according to a hedge fund billionaire. Okay. And, yeah, it's, you know, he recommends to have a guy, do this for you and to have him do it annually. I just do it quarterly. I think it's more efficient, and you can do this yourself. It's very, very easy. So basically you sign up with either I get nothing out of this as far as like any kickbacks or anything, you guys, but you can sign up with Vanguard. You can also sign up with Fidelity. You can sign up with Ameritrade, any one of these companies. If you do it with Vanguard, those are the tickers that you should use. And I'm trying to think of anything else. If you already have an account with Fidelity or something, just open up a Roth IRA, get on the phone with them there, describe exactly what you want, because this long-term government bond for Vanguard is going to have a different ticker than the one for Fidelity, because basically it's an index. It's a whole bunch of different stocks and bonds and stuff in there that are, well, not in the bond one, but a whole bunch of different bonds that even spread out your variance even more. It spreads out the risk even more. Does that make sense? So Ray Dalio, the architect of this system, he had a team of analysts go back 80 years and look and see how these would have performed had someone invested 80 years ago into this. And it averaged over 8%. There are some years where you're going to lose, but the risk is very minimal. I mean, it over the long run is what I'm saying. So don't get discouraged if the first year you put in $6,000 and at the end of the first year you got $5,800. Okay, that's going to happen. You caught it on a just bad variance. All right, keep them into those percentages, into those accounts, and just keep it rolling in 4 times a year, dollar cost averaging. Remember, this is post-tax, so everything that you make in this is going to be yours. You can't touch it until you're 59 and a half. You actually can pull it out before then, but you will get completely just raped in taxes, or not, I'm sorry, not taxes, but in fees. So just don't even consider it an option. It's just going in there. You don't touch it until 59 and a half. At that point, you can withdraw on it and you don't pay any taxes. Everything in there is yours. $6,000 a year. It comes out to $500 a month. This is literally what I do. I set up a link between my bank account and Vanguard. $500 goes in at the first of every month. And then every 4 months, that's when I buy, and in those specific funds, in those specific percentages. And that's really it. I mean, like, he gives an example here in the book of 30 years from 1984 to 2013. Now, we know from the housing crisis and stuff, there was a whole bunch of drops, but I mean, it made 9.7% during that time, which a lot of people would consider extremely volatile, but you're making almost 10% per year. This is just an all-weather one. It's probably not going to make as much as some other riskier ones, but it's very safe and solid. So take that information, do what you will with it. If you're maybe young and looking for some direction on retirement, this is where I would start. Okay. Hope that answers any questions. If I didn't get to something, tweet them at me or write me a headsuppokerpodcast@gmail.com. Go check out our new website, headsuppoker.info. We had to move over to headsuppoker.info, but same website, everything. Thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Push yourself. So you want to be the best. You want to get to the top. You want to achieve success. I'm sick and tired of all you people out there that go around talking about what you want, what you're going to get, what you're going to have, what you're going to do, where you're going to go, and not doing shit to actually make it happen. If you're happy in life right now, then you can stop listening now, because this video ain't for you.
The moments and situations you're steering away from are usually the things that need to be attacked head on. You're the one that needs to trigger that growth. You'll always be dreaming of a better life, dreaming of success, dreaming about the person you're capable of becoming.
We've all got things we want to do, dreams of what we want our life to look like. The problem is, most of us are standing in a busy street just letting the opportunities in life pass us by. We're waiting for the perfect situation, the perfect circumstances, the perfect opportunity, the perfect time. There's never going to be a perfect time or the perfect moment.